You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to Psyched by MG. This is Mary Grace Randazzo-Ratliff, or MG for short. I've been a psychotherapist in private practice for 32 years now. Guess what, everyone? We all have issues. So it's time to lighten up and move forward. Let's stop letting our crap control us and take control of our crap.
Here we are.
What's up, people? We're here.
Hey, hey.
Hello, hello. There's Barbara.
Hi there. How are you guys doing?
And we got Dave.
I am here.
And of course, we got Jamie Flanagan in the booth. So tonight, we, you know, well, before we get started, I've got to do my little spiel, people. I want to give a shout out to our listeners. And I just want to remind everybody to please, please, please get on Podcast Detroit, Spotify, Google or Apple Podcasts, LinkedIn, YouTube, and look for Psyched by MG. Give us a like, subscribe. And also write a comment about, you know, anything you'd like us to talk about, because it's really important. In fact, the last couple of shows have been, you know, due to viewers. Our show tonight, we're going to talk about denial.
No, we're not.
as Dave exhibits denial. Yes, yes. That came in from a viewer who asked us to talk about it. So we appreciate all that. And please, 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 you know, give us, you know, a rating and tell us your thoughts, because it's so important to all of us. And on that note, how's everybody doing tonight before we launch into denial? Dave, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Doing good?
Yeah, just, you know, it's really odd. I know we've it's kind of like beating the dead horse, but you know, because we don't go out and don't really do anything except for I work, I see my clients during the week, I go home. It just seems like Groundhog Day, and it's I just feel like my life is boring.
I know. I hear ya.
I mean, this is kind of like the highlight of my week. I get to get out of the house and go somewhere and go to a different place.
I know. Well, hopefully I'm going to come into this. We can go back into the studio.
Yeah. Well, I'm in the studio, so.
Yeah, I might be able to come into the studio. I don't know if Barbara can yet. You know, she's still recovering.
Right,
I think.
Right.
How are you feeling, Barbara?
It's going to be a little complicated with me, guys. I guess we'd have to talk about it. With two elderly people in my home now, my stress levels have just kind of shot through the roof with this whole COVID situation. So,
Definitely you have to protect them just because they're higher risk, of course.
That's precisely why say my, even like we're talking about the whole school situation too. So,
I hear you on that one. I mean, when you have the elderly living in your home, it's so, so scary. I mean, I just got back from New York dealing, you know, you guys know my dad unfortunately struggles with Crohn's disease. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's so interesting that we're going to talk about the topic of denial, because I lived it this last week. I could not believe, because my dad is 83 now, and I think my stepmother's 87, 88. Mm-hmm. And her denial of him even being sick was so remarkable to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to tell her probably 1,000 times, no exaggeration, he may need surgery. Mm-hmm. He may need surgery. Yep. And she was like, every single time, why are you saying that? I thought he didn't need it. I thought we knew. It's like, no, he still may need it. We still don't know. And we still don't know. But it's interesting. And that, you know, that pushes us right into the subject matter of denial. And we can talk about this in our own lives. We can talk about what we're seeing out in this country right now. And it's interesting, because what I was thinking about with denial is people are so stressed, and we're dealing with this pandemic. It has scared the hell out of people. Some people do not know how to deal with their fear. Some people don't even know when they are afraid. They don't know when they're stressed. They have a form of detachment. And so when you don't even connect to it, you go into denial about reality. And you'll want to minimize a real problem that's in front of you. This is some forms of denial. And, you know, everybody's met the person who doesn't cope with issues in their life. Like they just deny it. And people deny it by minimizing a real problem, a stress, a trauma, to the point of non-existence. And we're seeing that with the pandemic. I mean, we could really get into a major conversation about that, where and Jamie and all of us were just talking about, you know, going back to school. You know, that's a classic example of there's people who are so stressed and so tired that they're going into a form of denial in regards to what's really going on, and really then seeking good information about this and basing your decision as a parent on important factual information that is not minimized, that is not rationalized, and so diluted that you don't make a good, sound decision to protect your children. And this is, you know, with this pandemic, it can be in the alcoholic home, it can be where there is trauma, that people will rationalize and rationalize an important red flag that you should pay attention and not cope with it by denying the issues and minimizing it and listening for anything that may discredit it and not take it seriously. And when you deny a problem and you won't look at it and you rationalize it, you can't protect yourself from it. You just can't, because you've diluted something that has been in your face. And, you know, Dave,
mm-hmm.
we see people repeat the same problem over and over and over again because they won't look at it. They won't face it. They won't process it. They don't know how, some people. And that's why we, you know, see people like this. And Barbara, your TikToks are all about this, you know, really getting people to, you know,
don't
right?
get people to my TikToks. Let me tell you, this week has been mind-blowing. First and foremost, we had that absolutely amazing, and I say that not in a good way, conference of physicians who stood outside the Capitol and had their spokesperson talk about
it. I already know where this is going. I know.
And had their spokesperson, Dr. Stella Emanuel,
yep.
tell the American people that there is a cure for COVID-19, and the cure is called hydroxychloroquine, zinc, and zithromycin. Now, I have to laugh because the number of people who are in denial, and I think a lot of the don't wear a mask thing is really a form of denial in a lot of people. Because one of the things, and this is where the danger lies, Mary Grace, when you said there is such a denial that they will gravitate to anything that buttresses that denial.
Oh, absolutely.
And so she literally said, all these things we're doing about social distancing, there's no need. We don't need to do anything about wearing a mask. Let's not bother with that because COVID-19 has a cure. So why don't, listen to this. Oh my God. Why don't we put all our teachers on hydroxychloroquine? Let's put them all, you know, and let's get our kids back into school. We don't have to shut down our businesses. We don't have to worry about all this. The catch words, the buzzwords that people in denial hold onto are, she says you don't have to wear a mask.
Mm-hmm.
She says that there's no need for schools not to open. Do you know the thousands of people who ran with that and chose to believe her to the extent that even when people started trying to like look and see who is this woman, Twitter took down this video,
mm-hmm.
Facebook took down this video. It was retweeted by you know who. And even when people were told, look, this came out of Breitbart, that website. can we please verify? People didn't want to hear. It was, again, that like, la, 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 la. I can't hear the denial. And so when people started pulling up videos of her sermons, because remember, she's also a preacher.
Yeah, right.
And she's talking about how she's only part human and part extraterrestrial.
Yep.
I was like, people. And then, you know, countries, she said from Cameroon, educated Nigeria. All these places disavowed her and said, no, 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 she's not Cameroonian. The Nigerians are like, no, she did not go to school here. And then to find out that she had lawsuits for fraud in two hospitals in Louisiana, where she came from, because she was billing for things that she did not, for tests and stuff that she did not give to patients. Despite, I'm telling you till today, despite all that preponderance of evidence that indicates that this is not a reliable, credible person, people are still running with the mm-hmm. idea that, yeah, you know what? They don't.
Anything that will be right. Narrative that they can disconnect and not feel the discomfort that fear and anxiety makes you feel physically. That's and it. They, it, any narrative that just allows them to go into the denial space of La La Land, which right. is not true.
Right.
And then what they don't realize is when they go there, they create more chaos, more stress, because the problem is not dealt with.
Right.
So I have a plaque in my office that says, on the other side of fear, you always find freedom. If you face it and go through it and deal with it, you will change the narrative of whatever is in front of you. You right. will feel it and get through it. And when people are in fear, a lot of people don't know when they're afraid. Some people just get angry. Some people just shut down. They disconnect. They try to just fill themselves and just hear, you know, good,
right.
positive.
So then we have Dr. Stella who says this. And then a day later, Herman Cain dies. And Herman Cain mm-hmm. was one of the guys who was like, don't wear masks. I mean, he showed up at a rally without a mask. And it was just after that rally that he got sick.
Yep.
And now he's gone.
Yep.
And you think, okay, people, here is somebody
person
who was saying, somebody in a position of power. I always look at people with leadership roles. When leadership, Stella is a leader because she is, I'm not sure, don't quote me, but she's an alleged physician. Okay. That's leadership. No, we don't know yet because people are trying to look at her credentials.
Well, no. Who knows if she's even licensed?
Right. That's what people are looking at now when nobody's sure.
No.
Because there's nothing showing up. Even when you look on the regular places where you find accreditation, she's not showing up.
Yep.
So I'll say alleged. That's leadership. When you can stand before, anytime you can stand before people on any platform and speak about something, you are a leader. And so I always hold leaders highly responsible for what comes out of their mouths. And if it is misleading, I will be the first to call it out. And so, of course, I'm like, guys, take a look at this. Here's one of your leaders gone. Mm-hmm. Still, people are like, you know, this whole mask thing is taking away our freedoms. This whole thing. COVID is not real. It doesn't even exist. This is a conspiracy theory. I'm like, okay. That's denial for you. I mean, it's a big issue. And
it's denial, and it's wanting to run away from the problem. Yeah. And people that are doing that, this is a pattern usually in their life.
Mm.
That they don't deal with the realities that are in front of
mm-hmm.
them. And they tend to run. And, you know, we can look at alcoholics and alcoholism. You know, alcoholics congregate with alcoholics. And I've always said it's a disease of rationalizations where you rationalize a behavior that is destroying your life, but you minimize all the ramifications of that disease, that drinking, hurting your kids, hurting your wife, causing you to miss work, whatever the ramifications, the DUIs, whatever it is, you can't, as soon as it's in front of you, you minimize it. As soon as it's in front of you, you minimize it. And next thing you know, you've been an alcoholic for 20 years. It's a disease of rationalizations. And until you get that, you can't change it. Right. You have to get that your mind has got a problem in the way it processes anxiety, stress, feelings, that it just triggers, it shuts it down, it minimizes the problem, and it goes into denial, and it won't face it no matter what's put in front of you. I had a guy one 10 years ago, and I always tell this story. He sat in front of me. He had 13 DUIs, and he was court ordered to see a therapist. And I got the case, and I just started to laugh a little bit. So I said to him, I said, well, you got 13 DUIs. Do you think you're an alcoholic? And he said, no, yep. I have very bad luck.
Oh, wow.
He was dead serious. And I said, well, how do you explain all of the DUIs? And he said, well, the cops around here, they have it in for me.
Oh, boy. Oh,
not that they can't blow in the breathalyzer, dude, but they have it in for me. And I said, well, some of your DUIs are in like a few different states. Yeah, they all talk to each other. This is that rationalization process that people do when a real problem is in front of you, and you have scientists and healthcare workers and people, major universities, like with the pandemic, people from all over the world saying, this is a problem. This is a problem. And a person will rationalize it away to the point that they minimize it into non-existence. It's not there. You are over-exaggerating. And Dave, you well know in substance abuse, mm-hmm. You know, the alcoholic, if we look at the alcoholic and a spouse, the spouse will say, I can't take it anymore. You could have killed yourself last night. You drove when you shouldn't have drove. And the spouse will say, why do you blow everything up? Why do you make everything such a big deal? Right. My God, you're what? Always causing a problem. We had such a great time and you got to ruin it.
Why are you overreacting?
Yeah. Yes. Yep. Yes. Overreacting again, man. You're the one that blows a good night. Thank you very much. Jesus up and God. And they have this major fit and they're just trying to make you feel like crap for even bringing it up. And they're trying to dominate you to stop talking. And they make you feel like it's your fault that they're upset. Not the fact that they drank too much, not the fact that they drove, not the fact that they got a DUI or could have hurt somebody. Not they can't even see the spouse and saying, wow, my spouse got really scared. They see
you're making it so I sound like the spouse. I'm blowing everything out of proportion. That's me.
Yes.
I'm told all kinds of things. And it's I get attacked by people who have no clue who I am. So the last one I had was, who do you think you are? Are you a doctor? Are you a doctor? Because if you're not a doctor, then you need to shut up. And it's like,
Yeah, because I don't listen to anybody.
It's like,
I mean, even if you were a doctor, I would say, you don't have enough. I don't trust the university that we went to. I don't trust your experience.
Well,
I
mean, you're a bleeding liberal. You're bleeding.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure.
You're a Democrat. You're a bleeding heart person. You make a big deal out of everything. Oh, really? I think the rest of the world is kind of looking at the United States saying, why has every other country in the world not having a problem putting a mask on?
But you're
the
so
United
right.
States.
In the places where they can, you see, when it's like you put a bullseye on your back. When you speak like that, because that gives them that opportunity to come and attack as a way to reinforce. And not, it's like the same thing, trying to shut you up and shut you down so that they don't have to keep hearing that actually they are in denial and that actually they might need to wake up and look at things differently.
Yes.
So shutting you down.
And be accountable and be responsible. Be a responsible adult and function.
But isn't that the whole trick that most I'm going to say most people are not responsible adults. That's why we have these issues we have.
I think I don't know if it's most, but I will say I think a lot of people are surprised by how many people are like this.
See, I'm not surprised.
You're not, Dave? Tell me why.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just being pessimistic, but I just see a lot of stupid people.
You know what, Dave, as an African chick, and you know what, Mary Grace, you know this about me, right? I hear you when you talk about denial and being a mental issue and stuff like that. And you know, there are places and spaces in which I accept that. For example, sudden death of someone you love, or even eventual death, or diagnosis that you have terminal cancer.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Through your stages of grieving, denial being one, mm-hmm. and then rationalization and so on and so forth. But the way I see some of the stuff that's going on, I just think it's immature adults who need to be slappity slapped a little bit. And I've said this so often, where I've said, you know, look, I've said, can we stop making excuses for bad behavior?
Yes.
Can we stop making it? Because the kind of behavior and the denial I'm seeing is the two-year-old who says, you can't see me. You can't see me. And for me, that irks me something special.
Yeah. And you know, that whacks you.
Yeah. Because it's like people are dying around you like flies and you're still going, it's not real. It's not real. It's not real just because you choose to cover your eyes. Come on. So for me, I'm kind of in between where you are. You're the therapist who's like, yeah, there's this and this and this. And then I'm the one who's like, nah, see, where we come from, there's some things that we say somebody has a real problem. And then there's some things where we say somebody's just plain old stupid. And I'm seeing plenty of stupid.
Uh-huh. It is. Uh-huh. That is a very real reality, that there are people, well, there are some people that can be really smart and have no common sense. But it's the key, I think, and Barbara, you and I talked about this last night, that people can rationalize and not deal with reality to the point where their denial, they have no ability to protect themselves. When you rationalize bad behavior, no matter what the bad behavior is, you rationalize and you try to even understand the bad behavior. And I've seen this a lot where people, you know, on Facebook, some bad behavior is, you know, being presented in the post, and people are saying, oh, but the poor person's probably having a problem, or, oh, this poor, you know, this person's probably going through this. And sometimes I have to admit, I'll get on and go, bullshit. No, mm-hmm. You don't rationalize bad behavior. It's wrong. Because mm-hmm. if you don't see it as wrong, you can't set a limit and you can't protect yourself.
Boom. And I agree with you. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to watch, and especially people in leadership that do things that are blatantly wrong and bad behavior, and they don't get limits.
That's it.
And it spins them in a grandiosity, an entitlement.
But you see, because, and then the problem we have is when you have leaders do that, it gives the regular person on the street permission.
Yeah. People who start
to do that.
Yes,
because it's the reason why people are called leaders.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason we look for certain qualities in our leaders.
Yeah.
There's a reason we want people who have morals, who are ethical, who are kind, who have compassion, because they set the standard and the tone mm-hmm. by which everybody else will behave.
Yes.
Well,
because so many people are sheeples. So many people need to be led. So many people are not able to even say, look, this person is a leader, yes, but you know what? They're wrong. They're this. I'm not aligned with this. I'm going to do and be the right kind of person. Some people are not able to do that. And this is where I think the immaturity and sometimes the stupid comes in, because it doesn't matter. This leader hates what I hate. And therefore, if he's a lemming who's going to jump off a cliff, I'm going to jump right with him, even if I don't care where we're going. It's okay. He's the leader. She's the leader. And that's where the danger of leaders in denial themselves mm-hmm. comes in.
Right.
And do you think, and based on that, this is not a coincidence that as a society, we've regressed over the past 4 years? We've regressed in rights. We've regressed in human respect and dignity. And increased in hate and
empowered the wrong immaturity.
And we've regressed because the people are following a model that is regressing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, many models. I mean, I'm not. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I know there's one, but the yeah. whole the yeah. whole attitude, that whole thing is that's what's being modeled, and then it empowers people now mm-hmm. to be ignorant and racist and homophobic and yes. hateful.
Yes.
They've been empowered, and now they feel like, oh, he's talking to me, or they're talking to me. Mm-hmm. Now I can come out.
Yeah.
It's like a cult, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like you said, Mary Grace, that, you know, alcoholism is a disease of, what did you call it? A
disease. Rationalization.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and like community, like
you know, they all congregate.
They congregate. But like, aren't we seeing exactly that? It's almost like there's a cult-like movement of stupidity out there because the cult leader has modeled how it should be. And because one thing or several things about how he views the world and the things he hates and the things he espouses somehow align with the darker side of these people. It's like, finally, somebody has allowed us to be who we mm-hmm. are. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And now so, get my yes. freedom, my liberties.
Yes.
You know, I tell people this all the time. If you want to know the truth, watch the behaviors, not a person's words. Watch the behaviors. Look for the evidence. Now, a person of good integrity, a person of honor and ethics, their behaviors and their words will match. They will match. Somebody who is manipulating you, who deals with narcissism, who has a grandiosity to them, they're self-serving, their words and their behaviors will not match. They like to create chaos. And if they can create as much chaos, you will never figure them out. So if you're talking to them about a certain issue and you're addressing them and you're hitting them with the fact, they will deflect and create another storm to get you to think about something else. And then when you run over to that, then they flip the scenario again and do either a personal attack on the person who's confronting them or again, flip the scenario to something else. And so they like to function in chaos, I call it. Mm-hmm. Something that we used to write up, Dave, if you can remember it, Chelsea, and in our old records, the person functions in chaos.
Uh-huh.
They're a deflector and they don't allow you to stay focused. And they like to do that so you get so confused and so stressed out that you won't be able to keep your thoughts clear when you confront them.
Mm.
And then if that doesn't work, if the person is very masterful and pretty wise, there's a few interviewers that when they interview the president, for example, they can very skillfully stay very focused on the issue, then that narcissist will get wounded and wonder why you are attacking them so much and go.
They'll perceive it as an attack because as far as I know, nobody attacks.
No. But if you really watch the behaviors.
Yeah. They will perceive it as an attack. Mm-hmm. And everything is always centered around me, I. And it's interesting because like we're talking about this whole denial thing and, you know, the followers of such a leader are exactly the same way. The attacks get so, they feel personally attacked by a post that's benign. So I did a skit pretending as generic African auntie pretending to be Dr. Stella Emanuel. And I made the skit very simple. And I said, you know what? Hello. This is your doctor, generic African auntie. And I have come to tell the American people that I have found the cure for a brain that is too small. A pea-sized brain, yes. I have found a cure for that. And what you do is you take your multivitamins and watermelon. So I was eating watermelon. And it was like, it's just so funny. I just decided to make a parody.
God.
Do you know how many people were so angry with me? Like, how dare you? They'll go to things like, oh, it's another a black woman pulling another black woman down. That isn't very queen-like. And I'm like, uh-huh. So gaslighting is one of the things they do, because anything you do to throw a spanner in the cycle they're in of denial really, really incenses them. Like, they get mad, like, literally.
Yeah. They get the, Dave, the borderline wounding, the narcissistic wounding, you know, where, again, it's either you join me in my denial and you join me in my fantasy world. And if you don't, then you're attacking me, you're going to hurt me, and I become the victim. And how could you do such a thing to me? Why are you so mean? And in reality, and I hope our listeners are really understanding this, in reality, they are denying and not dealing and rationalizing something that is a problem to the point where they become delusional. It truly is a disorder that ends up creating a delusion inside themselves. They just are not dealing with reality. And a person who lives with somebody like that, and if they have a good heart, especially, they constantly feel bad for what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
They you know, Dave.
Yep.
They feel guilt. They feel like they aren't being loving enough, compassionate enough. This is where, guys, if you're that person that's always feeling guilty for having a need, a want, for setting a limit, for trying to, you know, give someone a dose of reality, you know, you're struggling with codependency. We can call it that.
Yep.
And you know, there's great books on codependency, you know, read them to understand, or there's books with, you know, there's, the one book, Dave, that we put out in the beginning about walking on eggshells, you know, when living with a borderline.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I'll get it to the, to everybody. But you have to, if you're the person on the receiving end of this twisted delusional reality, you're left feeling insecure. You doubt yourself. You don't trust yourself. You don't value yourself, because you've been taught your value is based on what you give others. And you feel guilt when you try to give yourself something. You feel guilt when you have a want or a need.
And the problem is, then you stay stuck in that relationship or that arrangement, and you never get out because you've just accepted that this is what it is.
Yes. And guess what? It's bullshit. Mm-hmm. It's total effing bullshit.
It's interesting, you know, just as an aside, this is what I do with my podcast for young people, Generic African Auntie, is this idea that if you don't know yourself, trust me, there's somebody out there who's gonna get into your life and run you.
Yep.
And run circles around you and manipulate. And to the extent that you will be left winded. Yep. And so, again, it is, how do we teach or show our young people that there are these people out there who do not deal with their own feelings? And one of the things they do when they're in denial is they project. They project and blame and don't want to hold themselves accountable. And to teach them the red flags of such a person earlier on in a relationship before you make a commitment that is difficult to get out of. Yeah. But more importantly is building these young people up. Because I look at all of us in this, because I think what happens in the microcosm of our life, in the very individual, is literally what is magnified in the collective. So we're speaking about denial both in the microcosm of human life, like as an alcoholic or, you know, relationship with a narcissist or borderline. But if you look at it in the collective sense, you could say that many of us need that self-knowledge. Many of us need to know who we are as a collective in order to be able to stand up as a collective against somebody who set out to run circles around us and leave us winded, just like in a relationship. And so I kind of take from what's going on around and bring it down and distill it so that young people can see how on an individual, one-on-one level in intimate relationships, in relationships with family members, this whole thing is playing out and how they can empower themselves in those circumstances so that they're not manipulated and so that they can live their best life. I think for me, it's these are some of the lessons that what's going on is drawing out. And I'm grateful in a way to be living in this time because it gives me the language as well to distill and articulate what I've wanted to articulate for young women, particularly for so many years. So, yeah.
And I think, you know, that that's so important in speaking to young people that this kind of personality, a person who, when you're saying there's a problem, I hurt, you've hurt my feelings, you, whenever you show up with your need, your want, your like, your no, your limit, if they're turning it into a burden and a problem and trying to shut you up, do not take those behaviors that they're doing as a reflection of yourself. This is not a reflection of you. This is a reflection of them. Your limits, your wants, your needs, your no's tell you who is in your presence.
Right.
And good, compassionate people will want to know. They will support you. They will be concerned. They will want to hear you. If they don't and they flip the narrative to make you feel bad or to shut you down or to get you to serve them, then that person you're talking with has a problem, a serious problem. Once you've figured that out, the key with the personality disorder that we're talking about, because, you know, when people read up on the narcissist, you know, there's levels of narcissism, there's the narcissist, then there's the borderline, then there's the sociopath, and then there's the psychopath. The highest level of narcissism is the psychopath. Read up and understand what that is. Then the second part, especially for young people, And Dave, you know this because we teach this in our therapy sessions.
Mm-hmm.
You limit your time around a narcissist.
Oh.
You do not because they are emotionally exhausting.
Or you cut them out completely if you can.
Or you cut them out. Mm-hmm. Yes, or you cut them out and you set a limit. You know, and Dave and I deal with this a lot where we kind of walk with people through that journey of, you know, if it's a parent, okay, huh? If you don't want them to be completely cut out, then you've got to really structure your time. And we have to strengthen their inner selves to the point where they don't swallow and absorb what a narcissist or a borderline gives off or a sociopath. Mm-hmm. And the longer you're in their presence, it doesn't matter how masterful you are, because Dave and I, you know, if we're in the presence of a borderline and we're there for 3 hours.
Ooh, you know it.
You know it. You physically don't feel good. You know, we have a phrase. We say it's like being with a psychic vampire where they lock in and they bite the life force out of you, or like a vacuum and they suck your energy.
Yep.
And deplete you of your resources. And when you get too fatigued, when you stay too long, self-doubt and feeling bad and getting anxiety and becoming symptomatic is very, very common. It happens. So you define how long, if you are and need to be in the presence of a borderline or a narcissist or somebody who always flips that scenario, you limit how long you can be there, if you have to be there at all. Because sometimes it's a friendship. You know what? That's not a friend because it's not a two-way relationship.
And honestly, I tell clients this. I don't care if it's family or not. Just because they're family does not mean you have to have a relationship.
Yep. That's right.
You don't.
Yeah, and I tell young people this too, that you know what? Your family of origin sometimes is the worst space you can occupy. Uh-huh. And I've told you about young people who are being disinherited and disowned and who are having like big checks hung over their head that if they continue with this activism they're doing for the BLM movement, the Black Lives Matter movement, then they're cut off the family. And so many of these young people are so savvy enough to say, well, you know what? This is just the straw that broke the camel's back. You have been manipulating me with your money. You have been doing this. And if this is the final straw, you're not doing it again. So you know what? Goodbye. Keep that. And they feel it's one thing to say it and act on it immediately because they know this is the right thing to do. But then self-doubt sets in.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
But this is my dad. This is my family. You know, and yes. Of course, there are all those memories and other things that have happened. And it's a grieving process that they then go through. And throughout that entire time, I stand in the gap for them to say, take it from me. This is how you feel now. But future you is going to thank you for the move you've made because you're going to move from this place of grief. Your spirit told you to get out.
Yeah.
Now you're grieving. Go through it. It's okay. But your family of origin does not necessarily mean you owe them your life.
That's right.
You don't.
That's right.
You're born to have your own life, your own views, your own ideas. So that narrative that you have let the family down, that you're now the black sheep of the family, that you know you're a disgrace to your family. And what is so sad with a lot of these young people is, you know, they use social media as a place to vent. Mm-hmm. And then they have older people, the trolls, who are saying to them things like, your mother should have aborted you.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or, you know, you're a disgrace to your family and to your side, meaning to white people. And these are youngsters who, like I said, for the most part, have done something that even is huge for young people. I mean, I know people in their 30s and 40s who can't walk away from family of origin.
Right.
So when you think that these young people, 18, 17, 19, 20, are doing it and then find themselves sort of alone and are being pilloried and are being blamed and are being told that what they've done is shameful, it's very hard. And
so
yeah,
hard. You know, it's helping. There's two things that these young people need to know to get through that storm. One, to know the difference between when their grief needs to speak and their pain needs to speak. And when it needs to speak, they have to get to their people, the ugly duckling story. You know, they are the swans in the duckling nest, and they have to get to the swans, and they have to create those supports of swans that will listen, that will be there as they grieve. The key is don't take that grief and turn it in on the self.
Right.
Because when you turn it in on the self and you go to a shame spiral or you go to guilt and you go to condemnation, you will get caught in a web. And if you beat yourself up, you're not going to change who your family is. What you're seeing is really hard, and it's painful, and it's difficult.
And I love the fact that they're not in denial.
I know.
They refuse to deny, you know, they're not going to bury their heads in the sand any longer.
That's
just
right.
Because this is family. They've gotten to the point where they're not in denial. And this is what a lot of people fear, is when you step out of denial, it means facing that fear and also facing some painful truths about yourself, about situations you're finding yourself in. Mm-hmm. And adults are having a hard time doing this. And I'm seeing phenomenal work being done by young people who refuse to stay in denial.
Yeah.
You know,
and what, you know, these amazing young people have such strong senses of right and wrong. And they're so gifted and they're so talented usually. And then the inner fight that they have is this very natural, innate need and desire to love their parents.
Of course.
To love them. And I never make a decision for a young person on whether they should be with the parent or not be with the parent. But I say to them, what we have to do is create the supportive, loving container for your grief as you face this and to help you to not turn this into self-abuse.
Right.
And then as you work through the grief, you will be the one that defines the relationship.
Right.
If you choose to have any connection, you will have to make important decisions in controls on what that relationship mm-hmm. will look like, how long you will be together, what you can do. I had one woman who was the only child and, you know, could not break from the parents because they were older and she didn't know what to do. And so I said, you define it. You define it. She came up with visits are 2 hours. When I go to do a visit to check on them, we can play a board game. We can watch these certain shows on TV. We will do these structured activities. When I get a headache, I know it's time to go. I've gone over my 2 hours. There's certain things that you will learn in that you will study within yourself in that container. And you will say, okay, that's my body saying that's the limit. And for other people, for other young people, there may be so much abuse and so much danger in containing the relationship that the best thing to do is to get out.
Yeah.
And then you've got to find your tribe. You've got to find and make sure that your tribe is healthy, strong people. Because I see so often young people who's feeling lost end up in the wrong tribe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or they gravitate to each other as the lost ones.
Right.
Yes.
And so they're all floundering and the result is they're all pulling each other further and further down with no skills and tools
yep.
to help each other navigate that. So that's always a real danger. And you're absolutely correct. I think I'm so grateful that our young people are woke. For me, being woke is the opposite of being in denial, mm-hmm. not the opposite yeah. of being asleep. Being woke means that you are looking at the world eyes wide open and accepting the facts of the world we're currently inhabiting. And then using the information that you're getting to figure out how you're going to take the next step or what your next step is going to be. And adults are failing. I'm sorry. It's not like I'm bashing the adults, but seriously, I will. Because we should do better and we need to do better.
We do need to do better.
Yeah.
You know, we see it. I mean, God, well, Dave, how many times you've had a parent sitting in that room and you just want to, you know, shake the crap out and say, you know, oh my God.
And that's the sad thing, because I love working with teenagers, adolescents. I love it. And the problem a lot of times is I have to deal with the parents, too.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's getting those teenagers to, you know, grow up quicker than they probably should have to and to learn how to trust themselves, listen to their voice, make sound decisions. Not turn the grief in at themselves by doing drugs, by, you know, having sex all the time and doing all these risky behaviors that ultimately create another problem, another crisis. And, you know, unfortunately, young people and adults, I've seen this, you know, young people become adults and continue the cycles where they just live their life by creating a crisis and a problem, and they go from one problem to the other problem to the other problem. Talk about denial. And there's a point where you have to stop. You have to be able to listen. And you have to be able to seek the advice from sound people who have proven that they know what they're talking about and have your best interest at heart. And if you don't have the ability to really look for that and then listen and face truth, yeah, your life's going to suck. Mm-hmm. To be just blunt about it, it's going to effing suck. You're going to go from one crisis to the other. Yeah. I just came back from my small town. And there are people in this town. This town is blue collar. You know, Dave and I were talking about this a little bit yesterday. It's blue collar.
Yep.
Got a lot of struggle. These are, you know, good people. The wonderful parts of them is, you know, if somebody's in need, everybody helps. But it's generations of struggling with poverty, struggling to overcome and do things. Some people get out. I was one of the people that got out. And some people continue with denial. and they don't leave, and they have generations and generations of young people who don't believe that they can get out, don't believe that they can get educated, don't get the information about education, don't even get food. We were talking about this one school in Dunkirk that these poor kids, the only meal they get during the day is the lunch. That's it. They're hungry. Mm. And I just look at this and go, oh my God, it used to be a factory driven town. It had the steel plant. It had Cliffstar. It had all of these major factories that kept a good economy there.
What does it feel like you to go back there, Mary Grace? Sorry to cut you off, because I'm just trying to like.
It's some ways it's sweet on some trips, and it's very hard right now because I'm seeing these families that I've known, and it was very ethnic driven. You were Italian, you were Polish, you were Puerto Rican, and it was such a melting pot with so much, you know, if I told you the names of the people that I grew up with, like the Cusimanos, the Lombardos, I mean, it was the Gaginos. I mean, you just go, oh my God, they're all Italian. Like they're all freaking, either they're Italian or they're Polish.
Right. Oh,
and they're all Catholic. They're all Catholic. And so when I go back and I listen to whether it's a relative or a friend, and I'm hearing the same problems, the same issues 40 years later.
Wow.
I go, oh, there's a part of me that says, how did I do it? How did I get out? Because I had no money. I mean, I was one of those rare, we talked about this in Getting to Know Us, right?
Yep.
Where we all three identified, wow, we all financially, our families struggled. You know, there were times I didn't have food. My mother went to the church to get that damn stupid, you know, Velveeta-like block cheese and can of peanut butter and a loaf of bread. And they weren't educated. My parents were not educated. And so, but I somehow, I was smart and I knew to listen to professors. I knew to trust teachers. I knew to talk to them and share, you know, my confusion and my vulnerabilities. And I wasn't afraid of a school counselor. And they were like these, I call them little earth angels that took interest and helped me and kept pushing me. More education, Mary Grace, get out, get out, get out. And I did. And I was able to listen to it and have blind faith, where a lot of young people right now, and it was a different society too, because we protected our children back in the 60s and the 70s. We still had the age of innocence where TV protected kids, communities protected kids. So if you came from the family that struggled, the society would protect the child. Well, now it's a free-for-all. Everything is deregulated. Television, you can say anything. You can talk about fornication. You can do the KY jelly advertisement at 11 o'clock in the morning. There's no regulation now. So poor kids who come from these tough families have got no one looking out for them now. No one giving them that reality check of this is right and this is wrong.
Well, and so, what happens is they find this information online, be it correct or incorrect, and that's what they go with because that's what they have access to.
And, you know, Dave, you hit it. I mean, and we talked about how YouTube, you know, didn't even become regulated as far as the horrific, you know, sexual content, the pornographic crap. And we ain't talking a Playboy magazine here. We're talking the bestiality shit and all the crap. That just happened a few years ago.
I know, right? When we were growing up, I remember Playboy being so risque. It was like, oh my, right? With the stars covering up people's private parts. And it was still like, oh my gosh. And now?
It's a free-for-all where we don't allow children to have the safe haven to let their bodies emotionally develop and evolve and cognitively develop so that they can be the ones to choose their entry into the sexual content, into their own exploration. And I'm not talking about being a prude here, people. Get it freaking straight. So if somebody's listening and they go to the prude thing, it's fucking bullshit. Yeah. I am talking about respecting the evolution of a child.
Yes.
Giving them what they can master at the time they can master it. Right. And that's gotten lost. It's gotten lost. It's a freaking free-for-all. Oh, kids are going to, you know, kids nowadays. And I'm like, really?
No, it's not the kids nowadays. It's the adults. We have
found out. Gave up.
And that's just it. You yep. know, and I keep saying this because mm-hmm. really we have, and I think that's part of the thing we must not deny.
Yeah.
Is the fact that majority of us have failed our children.
Yeah.
In whichever way, shape or form, every single human being is different. You know where your weaknesses and blind spots have been, where your children are concerned, especially in this world. This world was created by other adults. So we are part of this problem. You cannot sit there and say, oh, well, the media and the TV, this somehow that we drop the ball in holding people accountable. As societies, we get to determine what is streamed into our houses. And if we don't, then we drop the ball somewhere there. And we cannot, again, the denial is when you're kind of not wanting to be accountable and passing the buck on. Well, it's the big media corporations. No, the big media corporations are made up of people and we are the consumers. Okay. If there has to be a place in which they got permission somehow to do what they're doing so that crap is being streamed into our homes. Now we need to fess up and we need to own up to the fact that somewhere along the line, and sometimes because everything is just so confusing, we can't even track where along the line we dropped the ball, but we did.
We did. All of the deregulation, all of the whole, you know, everything's a free-for-all on television. Oh, this is just a movement forward. We have the right to express ourselves. You know, one time I was having a conversation with my husband, and he put it really well. He said, you know, my God, sometimes it's not about religion. It's about ethics.
Mm-hmm.
It's about integrity. Everything has gotten so pushed into Democrat, Republican, religion. And if you believe in religion, it's this. And we've lost. No, you can have whatever religion, but you have to understand what ethics is.
You don't even need to have religion, baby. My kids have been brought up irreligious, but these girls know right from wrong.
Right.
And that for me is more important than any religion that they'll ever have. And they will be able, if they choose to have a religion, they will be able to choose a religion based on what they see this religion espousing and based upon what they see the so-called religious people espousing. The most hateful people I've come across are religious.
Yep.
And my kids, I was like, when it came a choice, are my kids going to be baptized Catholic? Are my kids going to go for First Communion? Are my kids going to go for confirmation? The answer became a straightforward no, because I was like, what will I explain to my children when they get to an age where they're like, well, Mom, if this is such a great church, how come there's so many priests doing this or that?
Mm-hmm. I know. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know?
So I wanted them to develop the right and wrongness of things and just be decent human beings without any kind of religious framework, because that gets messy too. Because then people start doing things out of fear. And the minute kids are doing things because they fear a God who's going to punish them, then you know what? They're going to think they can trick this God and do things on the sly. You turn your kids into liars very, very quickly if fear is the thing that's driving their behaviors. And I didn't want that for my children.
Yep. Ethics, ethics, integrity, honor, responsibility. Watch a person's, as I think we're getting a signal from Jamie. I don't know, he popped back out. You watch a person's behaviors more than their words. Words lie, behaviors cannot.
Yep.
And that's so important for people to get from this show today. I mean, I think, and watch denial. because it's going to hurt you. It's going to bite you in the ass. Eventually it catches up to you. You just want it. You want to deal with it before when it hits you, it's lethal, because it can be lethal. And so next week, I mean, I'm liking this conversation. I mean, we might want to do a bit more with this. And then the week after, we have Lisa Bonage coming on. She did a TED Talk on, she did it for kids. Oh my gosh, I just lost it. The Hookup Society.
The hookup culture. Yeah, that's
hookup
a good one.
Culture.
Yep. Yep.
And I think we, you know, it piggybacks off of what we've been talking tonight with what's happening with young people. So we will definitely give a blast on Facebook, letting you know exactly the more details of the next show. Like I said, Lisa's coming on in 2 weeks. Dave, let's plug your podcast.
Yep. Motor City Hypnotist Podcast. It's on all the major platforms. We're up to 11 episodes now, so catch up on those.
Congratulations.
A lot of variety too. I mean, it is a hypnosis. The title is hypnosis, but there's a lot of therapeutic stuff. I did a book review on some of them. I did a movie, the movies that portray therapy. It's just a variety of stuff. So that's a little more.
Yes.
It's more.
And you know,
fun.
I'm so sorry, Dave.
No, you're good. You're good.
And you know, we talked about your TikTok, Barbara.
Yep.
No, please don't send people to my TikTok.
You can find
me on TikTok at Barbara Mangami, just as the name is spelt. My podcast is not yet launched because I am building my episodes, because when it does launch, I do not want the stress of thinking, oh my God, I got to do a podcast. So
we got to get ahead of the game too.
When that launches, then, you know, I'll be sure to let everybody know. Where
Yes. Cause we want to promote you just like we want to promote Podcast Detroit, who hosts us, and, you know, thanks everybody for listening in. We appreciate it. And again, please click away. You know, we've talked about we're on LinkedIn and YouTube and we're everywhere, Spotify and Apple Podcasts. You know, please give us your feedback. And of course, thank you to our team. And we're going to see you all next week.
All right, guys. Be safe. Be kind.
Bye, guys. Be safe. Be kind. See you guys. Bye.